Yesterday we started the Vyakhya of Sri Maharaj's Kripalu Trayodashi, and I told you that Sri Maharaj-ji wrote these 13 couplets to have a concise and clear explanation of his philosophy, how he teaches what is the essence of the Sanskrit scriptures. He's imbued all of that here in this Kripalu Trayodashi. So in the first five verses yesterday, we learned that there are three eternal tattva. And we saw several quotations from Vedas and other scriptures explaining to us that Brahma, Jiva and Maya, God, the souls and the cosmic energy, Maya, are three eternal existences. Anadi Anant, they never began and they will never end. Jeev, the souls, are Chetan, just like God. So not only are we the same age as God, eternal, but we are also the same as Him in this way, that He is Chetan and we are Chetan. And soul is said to be Ansh of God, not because we are a tukra of Bhagwan, but because we are His power, His Jeev Shakti. All the souls are part of Krishna's Jeev Shakti. So we are Ansh of His Jeev Shakti. So soul is Chaitan and Ansh of God. Maya is also God's power, not an illusion, but an actual power. But Maya is Jara. Maya is a lifeless and mindless power. And God is the Shasak of both Jeev and Maya. Now there's a third power, His Parashakti or Swarup Shakti, also called Yogamaya Shakti. This is God's personal power. God's personal power is what makes God all-blissful, all-knowing, all-powerful, omnipresent. Through this power, all the impossible things are possible for God. This power is called His Antaranga Shakti, His internal power. Maya is called His Bahiranga Shakti, His external power. And soul does not belong to Maya because we are not Jara like Maya. And we don't belong to Swarup Shakti because we are not all-powerful like God. So we're in between. We're His Tatastha Shakti, marginal power, in between, not belonging to Maya, not belonging to Swarup Shakti. So there are three main powers of God: His internal power, external power, and the souls. Jeev Shakti, Maya Shakti, and Swarup Shakti or Parashakti. And we also learn that God is the form of divine knowledge and divine bliss. He is Sat-Chit-Anand. And He is not just blissful, He is bliss Himself. He is Anand Himself. And souls are eternally ignorant and under the bondage of Maya. So today we're going to go further ahead, starting on the second verse on page 2.
Radhe, Radhe, go. Oh. ब्रह्म के अनेक रूप गोविंद राधे सर्व रूप आश्रय कृष्ण बता दे
ब्रह्म के अनेक रूप गोविंद राधे सर्व रूप आश्रय कृष्ण बता दे.
Yesterday we saw that both the souls and Maya are dependent on Krishna and are established within Him. We cannot exist without Him. He gives life to us and He also activates Maya, and we exist within Him. We're not separate from God in that way. Everywhere God is, anywhere we can go, God is there. So we are established in God. All the forms of God are also established in Krishna. So He gives life to us. We are established in Him. We are His power. We are His ansh. Maya exists in Him and cannot function without Him. And all the forms of God also exist within Krishna, originate from Krishna, and receive their power from Krishna. Ved asks a question. Kah paramo devah kasyan mrityur vibheti kasya jnanena akhilam jyatam bhavati. Gopal Purvatapaniya Upanishad says, who is the Paramadev, the supreme form of God? The same Upanishad gives us the answer. Krishno havai paramam daivatam. Shri Krishna is Paramadev. He is the absolute supreme form of God. Krishna eva paro devas tam dhyayet tam rasayet, tam bhajet, tam bhajet. The same Upanishad says, Shri Krishna is Paramadev. Krishna eva parodeva. Only Krishna is Paradeva, Supreme God. So, worship Him, surrender to Him, remember Him, meditate on Him, and receive His divine love. In Bhagavatam, it is described that there are three main forms of one single Supreme God. Vadanti tattva vidas tattvam yajjnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdyate. So that Supreme God, one single Supreme Power, Shri Krishna, He has three main forms, Bhagwan, Paramatma, and Brahm. Bhagwan means His personal form as Krishna when He's revealing all of His divine powers. So as Bhagwan, Krishna has form, He has His name, obviously, He has His virtues like being kind, playful, charming, gracious, beautiful. These are all virtues of Krishna's personality. All of His gunas are manifested. His divine abode is manifested. He has divine associates and He performs leelas with those divine associates. All of this happens in His form as Bhagwan. As Paramatma, He's concealing the divine love power. So only the almighty aspect of His personality is revealed. In that form He is Mahavishnu with four arms. He does all the work of this universe. Srishti, creating this whole universe, keeping track of all the karmas of the souls, giving the consequences of those karmas, protecting and maintaining the existence of this universe, and then in the end, destroying it, and again, doing srishti. He does this as Mahavishnu, that is referred to as Paramatma. So as Paramatma, Mahavishnu, his almighty aspect, he has form, he has name, he has virtues, although all of those virtues are not revealed, but many of them are. He has a divine abode, but he does not perform leelas with his divine associates in that divine abode. That only happens when he's in his Bhagwan form. And as Brahm, all of his divine powers, or almost all of them, lie dormant. So as Brahm, the same supreme power, Krishna, is formless. No form, no name, no abode, no virtues manifested outwardly whatsoever, no leelas, no divine associates to share those leelas with. So this is one single supreme power, Shri Krishna, and his three main forms. So all the other forms are included in him. As Paramatma, his main form is Vishnu, but he has other almighty forms as well, Shiva, Durga, and there are many affiliated forms like Kali, Ganesh, Kartikeya, Lakshmi, Saraswati. These are all almighty forms, Paramatma's forms, Shri Krishna's almighty aspect. As Bhagwan, he is Krishna, but he also has another form as Ram when he's slightly more reserved in his leelas. He still has leelas, but a little more reserved. The divine love power is not fully manifested. And if almost all of the powers lie dormant, then he's formless, Nirakar Brahm. But all these forms are Krishna. Bhagavatam says this, Avatara hya sankheya hare sattvanidher dvija. Bhagwan has asankhya avatar, uncountable different forms, uncountable different dissensions. But Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam, the Bhagwan who's taking all of those different avatar is Shri Krishna. He is Swayam Bhagwan. Or to put it in the words of Kripaluji Maharaj, all forms of God are Krishna, so they are all Bhagwan. Bhagwan Vishnu, Bhagwan Shiva, Bhagwan Durga, Bhagwati Durga, Bhagwan Ram. But Shri Krishna is Swayam Bhagwan. That's the difference. They're all Bhagwan, he's Swayam Bhagwan, because they get their Bhagavata from him. They are established in him. It's said in the Devi Bhagavat Puran, it's told, related, that all the male forms of God originated from and emerged out of the body of Shri Krishna. And all the female forms of God originated from and emerged out of the body of Radharani. This is another way of describing the very same thing. Although all the forms of God are eternally existing, it's not like one day Krishna decided to become Mahavishnu. He eternally has all of those forms. But this description is to help us understand that they're all established in Krishna. They're all established in Radha. Ved also says, Sa eka eveshvaraha narayano khila brahmandadhipatire konshah. There's one single supreme God, Shri Krishna. His ansh is Mahanarayan, Mahavishnu, who is the creator of akhila brahmand, uncountable brahmandas. A brahmand means a planetary system which includes an earth planet with souls living there, and their affiliated swarg and narak, celestial abodes and hell. So that's one unit, a planetary system called a brahmand. There are uncountable such Brahmandas in this universe. And one single divine almighty power, Narayan, Mahavishnu, rules all of them. And he is ekonshah, ekah anshah. He's one ansh of the absolute supreme God, Shri Krishna. This word ansh we heard yesterday as well. We are also ansh of Krishna. But we are ansh of his jeev shakti. Here in this verse, when it is said that Vishnu is ansh of Krishna, he is ansh of his swarup shakti. Big difference. So all the forms of God are ansh of Krishna. But like I said yesterday, we're not direct ansh of him. We're called vibhinnansh, means separate. We have our own separate individual identity apart from Krishna. So we're part of his jeev shakti, but all the forms of God are not up, they're not apart from Krishna at all. They are Krishna. They don't have a separate free will like we do. Krishna himself is all the other forms of God. So they are called his swanch. Sva-ansh. It means he himself has taken those other forms. So we are vibhinna-ansh, they are swa-ansh. So we are both his ansh, but in a very different way. Because Vishnu is Krishna. So he has all the power that Krishna has. Almighty, all-knowing, all-blissful, omnipresent, all-powerful, all the time. So the forms of God are God. There can't be more than one God. They're all Krishna. Whereas we are all individual souls with our own separate identity from Krishna. But Krishna is the ultimate ashray. This verse says that God has uncountable forms. Anantanama rupaya, Ved says. Ekopi san yo bahudha vibhati, Ved. Even though God is only one, yet he has uncountable forms, but the ashray of all of those forms is Krishna. That is what Sri Maharaji has said here. Yasyaikani shvasita kalamathavalambya jivanti lom vilaja jagadandanatha. Vishnur Mahan sa iha yasya kala visesho Govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. Brahma Sanghita. Brahma says, O Govinda, O Krishna, you are Adi Purush. Meaning, you are the absolute supreme form of God who is the origin of and the ashray of all the forms of God. And Mahavishnu, who is the creator of this universe, whose one breath creates uncountable brahmandas, and if he holds his breath, the whole thing is dissolved, that great of a supreme divine power, he is just a kala of you. He's just your power. He's your ansh. So great is Supreme God Shri Krishna. So, in other words, everyone is related to and dependent on Krishna. The souls, we get our life from him. Maya is activated by him. And even all the forms of God, their ultimate ashray is Shri Krishna. So everybody and everything is ultimately related only to Krishna. All the souls are only related to Krishna. All the forms of God are established in him. So Krishna is the ultimate refuge and ultimate goal of every soul. So we'll sing farther ahead now.
Brahma ke anek roop Govind radhe sarvarup ashraya krishna bata de
ke anek rup govind radhe sarv rup ashraya krishna bata de
sarv rup ashraya Krishna bata de
sarva rup ashraya Krishna bata de
Shri Krishna prapti se hi Govinda radhe जीव को दिव्य सुख प्राप्त हो बता दे
श्री कृष्ण प्राप्ति से ही गोविंद राधे जीव को दिव्य सुख
सुख प्राप्त हो बता दे
जीव को दिव्य सुख प्राप्त हो बता दे
श्री कृष्ण प्राप्ति से ही गो जीव को दिव्य सुख प्राप्त हो बता दे
श्री कृष्ण प्राप्ति से ही गोविंद राधे जीव को दिव्य सुख
The souls under the bondage of Maya have been under Maya since eternity. There are three terms. Mayadhish, the governor of Maya, that's Krishna. Mayadhin, that's us, the souls under Maya. And Mayatit, which means those souls who have gone beyond Maya. So, God, all the forms of God are eternally Mayadhish. Souls can either be Mayatit or Mayadhin. So we are all Mayadhin since eternity. I explained yesterday that had we ever been Mayatit, we could never become Mayadhin. Maya cannot just grab hold of God or a God-realized saint. Once you're with God, that's forever. So there's no way that you could become God-realized and then again come under the bondage of Maya. And if you are with God, you can never come under the bondage of Maya. Thus, we can conclude that if we are under the bondage of Maya today, we have always been under the bondage of Maya. This verse says that for the soul to find perfect happiness, the soul must attain Krishna, who is beyond Maya. There's no other way. Raso vai saha rasagvam hevayam labdhvanandi bhavati. Taittiriya Upanishad says very simply, Krishna is Ras, which means he's perfect happiness. Thus, only by attaining him can a soul become blissful forever, only by attaining Krishna. So we are eternally under the bondage of Maya, but we could become eternally blissful if we attain Krishna. This verse says, Shri Krishna prapti se hi, only by attaining Shri Krishna. Rasagmam hyevayam labdhvanandi bhavati eva. Ved says, only by attaining Krishna can you get perfect happiness. Jiva ko divya sukh prapta ho bata de. Real happiness means divine happiness. We are all looking for happiness automatically because we are ansh of God. Sri Maharaji explains this many, many times, that the reason we do anything is only to find happiness. There's no other reason for any action. But if you ask someone, why do you want happiness? Most people don't have an answer. You can keep asking them, why do you do this thing? Why do you do that thing? Eventually you'll come to happiness. For instance, why do you go to work? The person might say, well, I have to earn money. Okay, why do you want money? Well, if I have money, then I'll get enough food, enough medicine, I can support my family, I won't suffer. And if I have extra money, I can enjoy something in this world. I can take a nice vacation, buy something I want, go to a nice restaurant. So with money, I have the means of enjoying this world. Okay, so why do you want to enjoy this world? For happiness, obviously. Then ask, why do you want happiness? No answer. There is an answer, but most people don't know it. And most people would think it odd that you would ask, what do you mean, why do I want happiness? Doesn't everybody want happiness? Yes, of course. Everybody wants happiness, but why? Why does everybody want happiness? So Sri Maharaji says it's very simple. We are ansh of God. And every ansh naturally desires his anshi. Anshi means the one whose ansh you are. So we belong to him. He is the soul of our soul. He is the origin of our life. We belong to him in every way. So we are his ansh. And every ansh is naturally attracted to his anshi. Just like a drop of water is ansh of the ocean. The ocean is anshi. So when that water evaporates and rains down somewhere in the mountains, what happens? The water runs downhill. And when does it stop? Only when it reaches the ocean. So that's an example of ansh being attracted to the anshi. Another example would be if you took a fistful of dirt, a clump of dirt, which belongs to the earth. This is ansh, the earth is anshi. Hold that here. The two are separated, but only because you're holding it separate. If you let it go, it immediately is drawn inexorably to rejoin his anshi. In other words, every ansh has a natural love for his anshi. So every soul naturally loves God. Loke nahi sa vidyeta yo narama manuvratah. Valmiki Ramayana says that there never has been, nor is there, nor will there ever be, such a soul who is not a total devotee of Ram. Every soul desires God. The mind is another thing altogether. A person's mind might be polluted and confused and therefore may not accept or even want to think about God. But everybody's soul desires God. But our original question was, why do we desire happiness? And the answer to that is because God is happiness. We talked about that yesterday. Anando brahmeti bhijanat. God is happiness. So saying that we're attracted to God or saying that we're attracted to happiness is the same thing. So our soul eternally desires God who is Anand, thus we eternally desire Anand. It's a natural desire. It's not like other desires that we created. For instance, we don't eternally desire to watch TV. Just take that example. We created a desire to do something like that because we thought that would make us happy. We don't eternally desire to have money. All these worldly desires are actually created by our mind. But one desire was never created. That's the desire for happiness. So that's the original desire, and all other desires are called fulfilling desires. Those desires are secondary because they're only there to fulfill our desire for happiness. Why do I want money? For happiness. Why do I want to enjoy anything in this world? For happiness. Why do I want someone to love me in this world? For happiness. Not just for the sake of love. Love is supposed to make me happy. So happiness is everyone's original desire, which was never created. It's actually part of our nature, our swabhav. So it can never be changed. No one can ever stop desiring for happiness. So in fact, we are eternally devoted to God because desiring happiness means desiring God. But sometimes people just don't know this. So they think their desire is for the world when it's actually for God. So the question of finding true happiness depends on the correct knowledge. There are only two fields where we could seek real happiness. There are three eternal tattva. One of them is us, the soul. So that leaves two places to look. The soul is looking for happiness, so you can either look in Maya, or you can look for that happiness from God. That's the only choice. The desire for happiness is the same. And every person then decides, do I look for that happiness from God, or do I look for that happiness from the world? And that depends on the knowledge we've received. If someone hasn't received correct spiritual understanding, they look for that happiness from the world. And someone who has received the correct understanding from a true saint looks for that happiness from God. The one who looks for that happiness from God finds it. And the one who looks for that happiness from the world doesn't, because it's not there in the first place. There's no verse in any scripture that says the world is the form of happiness. No. All the scriptures say God is the form of happiness. In fact, the scriptures say there's not even a drop of true happiness in this world. Not even a drop. Because the world is just made of Maya. Maya is a inert, lifeless energy. How can there be happiness in that? There's happiness in God. Someone might say, not a drop of true happiness? Nope, not even a drop. Then what do we experience? We all think we get some amount of happiness in this world. What are we actually experiencing? What we experience in this world is the reaction of our mind when we get the association of something we're attached to. That's it. So it's our own kalpit sukh, our own imagined happiness. It seems real to us, but actually we created the attachment. We had a desire for happiness, and we saw something in this world. So the original desire was for happiness, not for the world. In other words, the original happiness was for God. But we saw the world, so we created a secondary desire. If I get that thing, I'll find happiness. If that person loves me, I'll find happiness. That desire we created. Then we start developing attachment in those things, wherever we have a hope of finding happiness or a faith of finding happiness, we get attached to that thing by thinking about it repeatedly. This person will make me happy. Again and again we think that. This thing will make me happy. We think it over and over again and our attachment grows. To whatever extent our attachment has grown, when we get that thing or that person, we get that amount of happiness. Less attachment, less happiness. More attachment, more happiness. And when you lose that person or that thing, an equal amount of unhappiness. If you had that much attachment, when you lose that thing, you get that much unhappiness. If you had that much attachment, you get that much unhappiness. So in fact, our scriptures say there's no happiness or unhappiness in this world. It's all just a creation of our mind. So those saints who have said the world is fake, they were not talking about the outer world, they're talking about this world in here. Our inner world of rag and dvesh, our world of attachments, of perceived happiness and unhappiness of our own mind. It's not the happiness or unhappiness of our soul, it's just our mind, our confused mind, which was correct in seeking happiness, but confused, thinking that it would find it in the world. So it developed false hopes, and the world is very alluring. It always offers a new promise. Will this person let you down? But this person won't let me down. We always move on to the next. Oh, I thought I was going to get happiness from this thing. It didn't work out. Oh, I'll get happiness from that thing. So the world keeps us hopeful, but never fulfills that hope. Happiness is always just out of our reach. Just like you see in movies sometimes, they put, to get the donkey to pull the cart, they put a stick with a carrot hanging down in front of him. So when he moves forward to get the carrot moves forward too because it's attached to him. So then he just keeps going after that carrot, but he never gets it. So happiness is always just ahead. Oh, it's so tantalizing. I just have to get this thing. But we spend our whole life like that and we never are done. No one ever is finished. We always have one more thing, one more thing. So this is the illusion of worldly happiness, which keeps us in its grasp for our whole life, and not only this life, uncountable lifetimes. This is the ignorance of every soul under Maya. So that ignorance has to be broken through correct understanding, given by a true saint and based on the real scriptures of Sanatana Dharma. So with this understanding, then the soul's desire for happiness is redirected towards God. You don't try to stamp out your desires, you just divert them towards God. The desire for happiness is correct, it's natural. But you can keep looking in the world forever and never find what you're looking for. Like, if you want butter, you have to churn milk, you have to churn curd. If you churn chune ka pani, whitewash, lime water, it looks the same as milk. So you think, oh, it looks like there should be ghee in there, there should be butter in there, let me churn it. You can go on churning for millions of years, you'll never get butter out of that. Churn the milk and you'll get butter. So go look for happiness where there is happiness, in God. We have been churning the chune ka pani of this world for uncountable lifetimes. Yet we still haven't woken up from this illusion. We still think, oh, there's happiness in this world. I haven't found it yet, but I will. If not today, tomorrow. If not tomorrow, the day after. And we go on like this for our whole life. There's an example given in our shastras of Mriga Marichika. A deer gets chased out into the desert by a lion. The lion gives up the chase. He says, "Why? I'm not chasing him out into that hot desert where there's no water." But the deer doesn't realize the lion gave up, and the deer races out into the desert and keeps running. By the time the deer realizes the lion has stopped chasing him, he's in the middle of the desert and he doesn't know how to get back. And he's extremely thirsty. But he sees water up ahead. So he runs. And when he gets to that spot, he sees, oh, no, there's no water. It was a mirage. But the deer doesn't understand what a mirage is. He just knows, I saw water here. I came to this place. There wasn't water. Oh, but there's water there. So the deer goes ahead. He gets to that place again. Oh, no water. But water's just ahead. He keeps going until he's dying of thirst and he's collapsed in the sand. He says, I'm dying and I can't walk or run anymore, but there's water just ahead there. I can see it. If I just could have gotten there, everything would have been all right. That's what we do. Our whole life we chase the elusive happiness of this world, which is always so close, yet just out of our reach. And we die and we still don't get it. On our deathbed, we're still thinking, oh, if I just accomplished that thing, if I'd just gotten this thing, I would have been happy. And we die. And we start over in our next life and do the same thing. So, this is the sthiti of all the souls under Maya. And we've been doing this not for one or two lifetimes, for uncountable, unlimited lifetimes since eternity, we've been doing this. Yet we call ourselves intelligent. Oh, I'm MA, I'm BA, I'm PhD. We have these big degrees. We think we're intelligent. But how can we call ourselves intelligent when we haven't even been able to understand this basic point that where is happiness? Is it in Maya or is it in God? And we've had uncountable saints come to us and tell us this basic fact. And we say, yeah, it's okay, it makes sense. But I still like the happiness of this world. For two reasons. The world is pratyaksh and God is paroksh. We can see this world right in front of us. So it's very easy to think, oh, just let me try one more time. And the other thing is because we're so attached in this world, even when our intellect has understood, no, I've tried this so many times, I haven't found happiness yet. It makes sense. Happiness is in God. If there are two people and you know that one of them is named Ramesh and you ask the first one, is your name Ramesh? He says, no, my name is Dinesh. Then you know the other one's name is Ramesh. You don't even have to ask. Process of elimination. We've proven through uncountable effort that there's no happiness in this world. So the happiness has to be in God. There's no other place to look. So we intellectually understand this, yet we're so attached in the world that our mind keeps bringing us back to this world. The happiness of this world is the happiness that our mind enjoys through the association of the worldly people and things through our five senses. Through seeing something, smelling something, tasting something, hearing something, or touching something, through these five ways, we get input to our mind, and based on our attachments, that gives our mind a feeling of excitement. And we call that excitement happiness. But that's just an excitement of the mind. It's the soul that wants happiness. The mind just gets excited and agitated by the so-called pleasures of this world. But that has never been enough for the soul. That's why even when we're enjoying the best things of this world, from deep inside we feel a lack. Isn't it confounding that even in your happiest moments you're not satisfied? Yet our mind is confused by this because we don't understand this fact that our mind feels the happiness, but our soul only feels the desire for God. So until you give God's happiness to your soul, your mind can enjoy the best things, the greatest things in this world, and your soul will always remain dissatisfied. All the enjoyments of this world are mayic. Your senses are mayic, and your mind is mayic. So you get mayic enjoyment. But your soul is divine. So how could mayic enjoyments satisfy your divine self? Only God's divya sukh, divine happiness, could satisfy you forever. So giving material pleasures to the divine soul in the hope of satisfying that desire for perfect happiness is akin to trying to see from your ear. It's completely illogical. You would never try to see from your ear. You hear from your ear and you see from your eyes. So the world can give your body what it needs. It can give sustenance to your body. It cannot give happiness to your soul. The world is here for a reason. It's not useless. It's here for your body. God is here for your soul. So your soul, it pervades your whole physical body. And God pervades this whole world. So, God who pervades the world is for your soul, which pervades your physical body, and the world is for your body. So both are there for us. God is here and the world is here. The world is here for our body, and God who pervades the world is here for our soul. So, if we look for happiness from God, we will get it. But we've never wholeheartedly looked to Him. His happiness has three qualities as defined by the Vedas. Yo vai bhuma tat sukham, Chandogya Upanishad. Real happiness, real divine happiness must be unlimited in amount. Everlasting, never-ending, and ever-increasing, every moment multiplying and increasing. The happiness of this world doesn't meet even one of those qualities. We know that worldly happiness is always in limitations. However much happiness a person has, he can always find someone who has something better than he does. Even Indra, who has so many millions of times more power and pleasures there in Swarg than we have here. Indro vanchati brahmam padam. Indra desires Brahma's seat because he sees, oh, Brahma has much more power and aishwarya and luxuries than I have. So, even in Swarg, the enjoyments, the happiness is always limited, and it's for a limited time. That's our own experience. No one has ever gotten a happiness in this world that lasted forever. Same thing in Swarg. It's all temporary. And instead of being ever increasing, whatever happiness we do find in this world, the first moment of enjoyment is always the best. I'm sad to say, we're always sad to admit this fact. The first moment of enjoyment is the best. After that, it gradually reduces. Whether it's the taste of something that you're really enjoying, the more you keep eating it, the less enjoyment you're getting until you stop. Whether it's being with a loved one, that first moment of meeting after a time of separation, that moment is the greatest happiness. And after that, you gradually get bored. Then you need a break. No one likes to be together with the same person 24 hours a day, all the time. You need a break. So the happiness of this world is limited in amount and limited in the period. It always comes to an end. And even while you're enjoying it, every moment it's decreasing. So in every way it fails to meet the criteria of true happiness. So Sri Maharaji says in this verse, only by attaining Sri Krishna can we find real divine happiness. So he is our ultimate refuge, our ultimate goal, and only by attaining him can we find perfect, everlasting happiness that would make us fully satisfied in our soul.